Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
Here's your money briefing for Thursday, February 1st. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. Many Americans who use natural gas to heat their homes caught a break amid a surplus in a milder winter. But demand and the impact on prices extends beyond the winter months.
The modern world runs on natural gas. It's not just heating, it's not just electricity, but it's also fertilizer is made with huge amounts of natural gas, cement, plastics, cardboard. Just about anything you touch has either required natural gas for the energy to produce it, or as a feedstock in a chemical sense to make it.
We'll talk to Wall Street Journal reporter Ryan Dezember about the outlook for natural gas prices and what it means for your monthly bill going forward after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Plus, save time by completing security questionnaires with Vanta AI. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ. That's VANTA.com/WSJ.
An unseasonably mild winter for many areas of the U.S. means Jack Frost isn't nipping at your nose. It also means there are opportunities to save money. WSJ's Ryan Dezember looked into that, and he joins me. Ryan, why has it been cheaper to heat your house this winter?
Well, you really have to go back to last winter after the Ukraine invasion by Russia. It shocked energy markets and sent off a global scramble for natural gas. We were all expecting really high prices last winter. And then winter never really came. It was a very mild weather. Meanwhile, gas production, particularly in the U.S., chugged along, hitting new records throughout the year. And we ended up with a glut to start this winter. And despite the last week where we had the first measurable snowfall in New York in a couple of years and the plains were just iced over, we really haven't used that much natural gas. So we're still at a significant surplus looking at the end of winter. So the prices come tumbling down.
What's been the impact on the prices? What's been the trajectory during this time period?
Winter is usually when natural gas prices are at their highest because in addition to using gas for electricity and all the industrial uses to make cement and glass and plastic and all these things that we live with, you also have heat demand, particularly in the north where a lot of the coldest parts of the country, most of the homes are heated with natural gas one way or the other. So we expect prices to be higher this time of year than they are the rest of the year. But what's happened is because of that surplus, the prices just come tumbling down, more than 20% cheaper than a year ago. And really, we're at a price about just over $2 per million British thermal units. That's sort of what the price hit last April when they came tumbling down from last year's non-existent winter. We're getting a spring-type price in the dead of winter, which is very unusual.
So when people get their natural gas bill, it says BTU. That's the British thermal unit you were talking about?
Correct. And in a commodity, the traders and the producers of the world, they measure it in millions of British thermal units.
You also mentioned electricity and industrial products. Sounds like there's natural gas in a lot more than just the heating unit in your house.
Yeah, the modern world runs on natural gas. It's not just heating, it's not just electricity, but it's also fertilizer is made with huge amounts of natural gas, cement, plastics, cardboard. Just about anything you touch either required natural gas for the energy to produce it or as a feedstock in a chemical sense to make it.
The grass gets a little greener in March, but still it's cold and people be using natural gas.
So March is sort of like when the heating season starts to wind down. Right now, we're typically in the thick of it. Even though we're not dealing with blizzards and iced over roads and things like that, we still have our heaters on. Come April and May, when people start opening their windows, they don't have heat on, they don't have air conditioning on, and that's sort of the, they call it the shoulder season.
So the supplies are higher and it's costing less to heat people's home and they're not using as much gas. Are there concerns about where to store all this gas?
Yeah, we've gone pretty quickly, as happens in commodities, from a period where people were worried about shortfalls to now a period where we are worried about gluts. And if you think about commodities, naturally the cycle usually is we don't have enough. And so everybody races to make more because the price rises. Well, then everybody makes more and the price comes crashing down because then we have too much. We're sort of in that situation where the concerns on Wall Street and among producers and traders is not so much will we have enough to get through winter, which was a concern heading into last winter when the world, of course, was recovering from the shock of the Russian invasion. Now we're at a point where we're worried about where will it all go? And there's a finite amount of storage in the United States. Gas is generally stored deep underground in old salt caverns. And then prices are lower in the spring and summer and fall. Traders will buy it, put it into storage, pay the fee to store it, assuming that the price will rise to a profitable point where they pull it out of storage in winter when demand is higher.
So what could that mean for people's bills next winter?
Presumably, assuming we don't have war and production stays apace and there's not like a terribly unusually hot summer that produces a lot of demand for air conditioning and electricity, you would start out presumably with lower prices. So we're sort of in this long process of unwinding the big run-up after the Ukraine invasion, where prices got to $9 or $10 to where they're in the $2 range, threatening to go below that, which sets off alarm bells in the oil patch. That gets to be a price where a lot of wells aren't economical to drill if gas is the main product coming out of them.
When we talk about commodities like natural gas, we often hear about the future price and the futures market. What does that mean? And how can somebody paying their bill follow along and know what they might be paying?
In the Wall Street Journal, we usually quote the next month's price. Like the gas that's going to be delivered in March is now the main price. The February gas just came off the board this week. Basically, you use that and subsequent months. Big utilities, big industrial companies that buy a lot of gas, they'll use that to lock in prices down the road in the future and to do their hedging and things like that. Traders will look at that to place their wagers on where they think the price will go in the future. So we quote gas prices. They're spot prices, and they vary from region to region. When there's a snowstorm in the Northeast, the gas price will jump up temporarily in the spot market, meaning I want the gas on the spot delivered right now.
Because of an expectation of what might be used?
Yeah. So like when the winter storm came a couple of weeks ago, the prices where that was hitting were running up because people in those regions were buying extra gas to make sure they had enough, usually utilities. What sort of will happen, though, is, you know, that price comes down very quickly. And the futures prices, because we're looking at gauging demand in March, the price won't be as volatile and responsive as to today's weather, except in the case where today's weather will cause enough gas to be burned on a national scale to really affect how much is in storage.
That's WSJ reporter Ryan Dezember. And that's it for your Money Briefing. We'll be back tomorrow with WSJ's Veronica Dagger to discuss what the Federal Reserve's decision on interest rates could mean for mortgage rates this year. This episode was produced by Ariana Osperu, with supervising producer Melanie Roy. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.